Hey everybody, welcome to episode 4 of CreateCast, the show about people who make good. I'm your host, Chase Kay. We have a really incredible guest today, the one and only Kate Crater, restaurant editor for Food & Wine magazine. If you're new to CreateCast, welcome to the show. I really appreciate you taking the time to listen. Also, while you're here, remember to rate, comment, and subscribe in the iTunes store so you can hear from more incredible guests every week. We're going to be running all through the summer, and we're actually going to have some other cool food people on. Some names you might recognize are Chef Ludo Lefebvre of ABC's program The Taste and his incredible Tuamek restaurant in Los Angeles, and actually one of the new Food & Wine Best New Chefs for 2015, Chef Carlos Salgado of Taco Maria. In fact, Kate and I talk about Chef Salgado and his restaurant in the interview. It's a really cool conversation. I can't wait for you to hear it. This episode, we're doing a special giveaway. If you'd like to win a CreateCast sticker pack, some other goodies, and a copy of The War of Art by Stephen Pressfield, an incredible book on creativity, make sure to comment and sign up for our email newsletter. One random commenter in the iTunes store and one random email recipient will receive those awesome prizes. If you'd like to double your chances, make sure to comment on our podcast, CreateCast, in the iTunes store, and also sign up for our newsletter at createcastpod.com. You just might win. And now, a little bit more about the interview. Food & Wine is obviously the award-winning publication and one of the sort of no-brainer sources for anyone who's even remotely interested in food or the food world. Kate was a great interview, and we talk about everything from her early days cooking in France to how she got into food writing and even some of the cool new Food & Wine features coming up. So, once again, thank you for tuning into CreateCast. Visit us at createcastpod.com to sign up for our email newsletter. Once again, we're going to be selecting one random commenter and one email recipient to receive the awesome prizes I mentioned earlier. Without further ado, here's Kate Crater, restaurant editor for Food & Wine magazine. Hey everybody, we're here with Kate Crater. She's the restaurant editor for Food & Wine magazine and an incredibly talented writer. Kate, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Chase, I'm so psyched to talk to you right now.
Well, it's been a long time coming, and I'm really excited for people to hear everything that you've got to say. So let's just sort of start. I think, you know, it's interesting. It's so popular right now, just food culture and food writing. But how did writing, and maybe did it start with food, or was it writing that sort of found its way into your life first?
You know, it was a combination. I went to a very liberal arts college called Kenyon in Ohio that was all about you did English or you did science. And so it wasn't until I was driving home from college, because I'm from New York City, so I was driving home from Ohio with my dad, and he said, what are you going to do? It was very, very laid-back family. And I thought he was a lawyer, so I thought I think I'll go to law school. And my dad was like, you know, I think you like to write and you like to eat. So maybe you should go work for a food magazine.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't always listen to my parents, but in that case I was lucky and I did. And I got a fun job at Family Circle magazine in London right after college. Like, it was an internship
through
a connection. It was so cool. And then after that, I went to cooking school in France, and that's where I really, you know, sometimes I think people have a food epiphany. The people who get like really into it or get super hooked, there's like a food epiphany, and you can grow up your whole life and like eat good food and be happy with the sandwich or that burger. But sometimes there's something that just grabs you. And in France, I was doing like another internship, and there was a garden, and I was in Burgundy, and the garden was basically, the walls of the garden were from like the 16th century, like so old you can't imagine it.
Oh, wow.
Here in the United States. But I remember going to pick raspberries, and it sounds so lame and cliche, but I remember like having this raspberry, and I was like, this is so good. It was like a wake up call kind of. And that night there was this extraordinary chef called Chef Chambret, and he was the kind of guy, he was like a one-star Michelin chef back in the day. So he was like old school, like he could stick his hand in a pot of boiling stock to take out the bones. Like, that was nothing for him, you know, he would just do it. And But he made food so good, and he'd added a lot of butter. Like, it wasn't like he was doing something crazy, but he was all about tasting. And that night we had a really delicious, like, blanket de veau or something like that. And I watched him, like, I tasted it before he added extra butter and salt and after. And there was something about that day, like, I feel like the lights just went on. And then I just, from that, that was like a point where I just got obsessed with food and really good food, not just food, although I love, like, new trends, and I love seeing, like, new restaurants and new things going on. That's always exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But that, I feel like that was a day I got obsessed with, like, eating and finding good food.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, that's just so visual, that story. It's really sort of magical.
Oh,
and I think
I think
everybody has those moments, you know, whatever their sort of outlet is or whatever they're passionate about. It's that sort of thing where it hits and they say, oh, I get it now. This is something that's really, mm-hmm. really important to me. And that's so fantastic that you were able to pinpoint that. When so obviously you were cooking there, and then how did that sort of translate into writing? Was it just sort of as a result of, you know, this is what makes sense, or how did you maybe approach food writing differently from just normal writing? Because I think there is sort of an art to it.
100%. That's actually a really good question, because at my cooking school at La Varenne in France, you could be a practical stagiaire, which is the word for intern in French. You could be practical, or you could work on cookbooks, because the woman who ran it, Anne Willen, who continues to be my hero, was also someone who was producing cookbooks. Like, her aim was to be the Julia Child of England and France. Mm. and she didn't quite get there, but she was good friends with Julia Child, and she did a remarkable job. And so I was, it became pretty clear very quickly that I could never be a practical stagiaire. My cooking skills are not that great. And
yeah.
And my French was really bad. To be a practical stagiaire, you had to be able to translate the French chefs for the American students. And my French was so bad. It was just always so bad. My cooking skills were not so great. And it became pretty obvious that I was much better working with on the cookbook side of things. So I think that's something I've always liked. I love food. Like, I love to eat, and I like to cook, but I think I respond to food better on the page, like writing about mm-hmm. it and reading about it and talking about it. I'm much stronger than if you actually gave me, like, a frying pan and an egg and make an omelet. I would go through a lot of eggs before I made you a good omelet, I think.
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting. It's sort of, whenever I go out to a really fantastic restaurant, I think there's this sort of element of being, like, wanting to understand it, but at the same time, the reason you go out to eat, I think, is it's so important because it's something that you don't feel that you could do yourself. And there's something mm-hmm. that's sort of like, wow, it's so cool to see someone at you know, the top of their game doing something that they were clearly born to do.
Chase, I think that's so smart, actually, because I think people don't pay attention to that, and not to, like, pat everybody on the back and say it's just as good to be an appreciator as the person who does it. But I do think there's something to be said for people who are cheerleaders, as I know you are and I am, of the really good chefs and the really good restaurants and people who are doing something special.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that's what I feel like I am.
No, yeah, I think that's really interesting. So it's sort of a cool role that you have, both because you're sort of an interpreter of culture through food, but also you're a creator of that same culture because of, you know, where you work with Food and Wine and your writing. So what do you see sort of as your role as far as those two sort of areas? Just because you sort of take in a lot of information, but at the same time, you're helping to shape sort of the current food landscape and, the sort of creative landscape.
Thank you for saying that. I will say Jonathan Gold, who is my hero in this world, and you're so lucky to live in Southern California and have him as the voice of your food world. Like, I think literally there's no one better in this world at describing what it's like to take a bite of something and making you mm-hmm. feel like, if you're not lucky enough to eat it, making you feel like you're eating that bite too, or you can imagine what it's like. But Jonathan Gold said that Food and Wine magazine just announced our best new chef.
Mm-hmm.
And Jonathan Gold just shouted it out as a really good landmark or benchmark of what's happening with the food scene. And so we talk about Carlos Salgado at Taco Maria, and the fact we picked him as the best new chef this year, which I'm really excited about, and Taco Maria's in Costa Mesa, and we feel like that's part of this huge trend of tacos right now. I mean, mm-hmm. you guys in Southern California, I think, have had access to really good tacos for a while, but now you're seeing these really talented chefs start making them. And like here in New York, we have a chef called Alex Stupak, mm-hmm. and he has a restaurant called Empillon, and a series of them. And they're doing Empillon Al Pastor, I think, is his newest one. And he's just solely focusing. The focus is really on tacos. And then Sean Brock has opened a taco place. Rene Rezepi from Noma in Copenhagen is going to be involved in a taco place. So
really? I hadn't heard that. That's incredible.
It's really cool. Yeah, his pastry chef, Rosie Sanchez, is going to do it. And he's behind it, but he's been taking tortilla lessons in Mexico. And so the fact, and Enrique Alvera opened a place called Cosme. He's a very famous chef in Mexico, and he just opened a restaurant in New York where he's making sublime tacos. So we picked Carlos Salgado as the best new chef, and part of that, I mean, it's a fantastic restaurant, as you know, and his four-course menus are exquisite. But I think it also speaks to the power of tacos right now and just how much we're going to see of them. So that's a long answer to your question, but I think that I think at Food & Wine, we like to spotlight trends, and not just trends for trend's sake, but what we think is really powerful and moving the needle and what's going to be interesting for people and what we're obsessed with, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's really interesting because it's sort of, you know, in the past few years, you've seen sort of the food truck revolution and sort of the yep. more accessible fine dining becoming more popular. And I think that the taco is sort of that perfect vehicle because everybody likes tacos. I mean, it's just such an accessible food for people to get into. And then, you know, I mentioned Gorilla Tacos earlier, and it's, you know, mm-hmm. really could be a plated dish. It's just served, you know, in a tortilla. It's that sort of thing. It's such an interesting way to sort of maybe introduce people to ingredients that they maybe wouldn't have tried before or just wouldn't have had known to even think about trying before.
I think that's so smart. And like Alex Stupak, for instance, from Empillon here in New York City, has pointed out that sushi used to be a street food, the way tacos, mm-hmm. like he's really out to elevate the profile of the taco and make people appreciate them for being something that you want to eat immediately. Like you really don't want to eat a taco from 7-Eleven that's yeah. been sitting in the warming tray. I mean, you don't need me to tell you that, but I'll just say it. You don't need to be eating that taco. And really, it's an immediate thing where someone should be handing you a tortilla that's freshly made, filled with something that they just put inside mm-hmm. that tortilla. And that's when it becomes something really great. And he did something kind of brilliant. He started using elite chef's signature dishes as fillings for his taco. So Jean-Georges Van Gerichten has been making a famous scallop dish for years. It has a raisin puree and curried cauliflower, I think. And Alex Dupac's a very talented chef. So he made those scallops and then he put them in a tortilla. And he picked, he also, I think, picked a dish of Wiley Dufresne and made that into a taco filling. And it's really, it's kind of eye-opening. Like, it sort of makes you think, wow, like, I can't discount a taco when I can't say I'm only going to pay $3 for one when you mm-hmm. see how much care can go into making one and what's, you know, what's behind it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that's a really incredible point. I think, you know, as a musician, I see a lot of similarities there just because, you know, as a musician, you're sort of always taking influences from other artists and, you know, sort of putting that into your own music. And even though you might, you know, other people might not be able to hear it, then, you know, it's always sort of there in the back of your mind. And I think it's so cool to see how chefs sort of take other influences, you know, whether it be, you know, food that they ate as, you know, kids, or whether it's things that other chefs are doing. It's so cool to see them all sort of borrowing from each other and you know, sort of creating something new at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's so fun, you know, Vinny Dottolo from Animal and Son of a Gun and the about to open John and Vinny's mm-hmm. restaurant, which I'm so excited about, recently compared a kitchen to a band. And he said it used to be, you know, like 20 years ago and probably even 10 years ago, there was like a lead singer and you didn't necessarily know anybody else in the band. But now restaurant kitchens are functioning as bands with everybody coming with like you know, it's more of a group thing where the bassist will come in and, you know, be a major part of it. And so now there's like sous chefs, and the sous chef might be Mexican or he might be Vietnamese, and you start to see more of those influences from all over the kitchen in a dish, and not just the head chef. You know, you don't just know the head chef anymore. You don't just see his cooking in it. And that seems to me to be so much like music.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious to know, are there any sort of things that you think are really on the cusp right now that people should be thinking about, you know, in both the sort of the food world, just the eating world, anything that's really catching your eye right now that you haven't seen before?
I'm really interested in collaborations right now. I mean, we've seen them before, like certainly in the chef world. We pick a lot, like John and Vinny are two chefs working together. But I'm speaking more about, like, here in New York City, there's a really good new bagel place called Black Seed Bagels. Mm. And they've invited, like, local chefs who have very different kinds of restaurants and make very different food to come in and, like, do a bagel. And so someone from Mission Chinese Food did, like, a cool bagel. I think it was, like, a squid ink bagel. And it had some kind of cured salmon filling. And then Hometown Barbecue, which is this excellent barbecue place in Brooklyn, did this crazy, crazy pastrami cured, I think it was pastrami cured brisket on an everything bagel with like sauce. Oh, my God, I'm making myself so hungry talking about it. But they got like it's much more than that, but they had like an Italian chef, Missy Robbins, doing a sort of Italian-y kind of bagel. And when I say bagel, I mean bagel sandwich. So they had like different chefs coming and doing mashups of that kind of thing. And there's a restaurant, a Spanish restaurant called Huertas, that serves little tapas. And they have chefs doing a tapas takeover once a week. And so I think like a Taiwanese chef, you know, came in and did like a sort of Taiwanese inspired tapas. And then I don't know who's going next week. But I like that kind of cross-cultural mix, you know, mashup, especially of something that's really, it's not like street food, but like super comfort food. I think that's really, really fun.
No, yeah, I think that's really cool. It's sort of, I think, you know, maybe the term fusion cuisine gets a bad rap sometimes because you sort of associate it with like, I don't know, maybe like a cheesy 90s bar. But at the same time, it's also really interesting to see, you know, just the way that chefs take from other chefs, you know, seeing those different cultures come together and it's sort of celebrate each other while at the same time, you know, creating something really distinct.
Exactly. You know, that's exactly right. I think it is like, it's like when a guest star comes on stage, you know, when you have like two unlikely musicians coming together, and that's sort of what this is like when it's at its best. And so I'm interested in that. We talked about tacos. I know you guys have much in Southern California, much deeper taco knowledge, but for me, that's exciting. And I'm also psyched about, I'm not even really a breakfast person, but I'm really excited about the emergence of breakfast and lunch. And I think it's an extension of the comfort food thing that you were talking about earlier. But we have a best new chef this year, Jonathan Brooks, who's from a restaurant called Milk Tooth in Indianapolis. And that restaurant's only open for breakfast, brunch, and lunch. It's not open for dinner. We've never picked a best new chef that wasn't, you know, serving ambitious dinner food. Well, not ambitious, but, you know, we've never picked a chef who wasn't cooking in the evening. And so I think like what he does, really smart things, like he makes some next level pancakes, and he spikes the maple syrup with cocoa nibs, and that's just a minor, that's like 1/10 of what he does. He's making like Long Island iced coffee, which is an ode to the really trashy 80s drink that everyone got wasted on. But also it speaks to, he has like a fantastic coffee program. And everything he's doing is just, like, really careful, making, like, fantastic jams that he puts on, like, a Dutch baby pancake that's made with malted yeast and stuff like that. He's doing so many things right, and so I'm interested in that. Like, I feel like you can go overboard and you can be too precious, and sometimes a hot dog should just be a hot dog, and it shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't try and make it a 3-star experience. But I do like the idea that someone can like look at eggs, like bacon and eggs, and all of a sudden give you a dish that you haven't seen before and makes you really excited.
Well, yeah, no, that's really incredible. I think, obviously, you know, for anyone listening, if you haven't picked up, you know, the latest Food and Wine to check out those Best New Chefs. And what month issue will that be?
That comes out, that's in our July issue, which comes out in early June. In our May issue, which is what's on stands now, we are psyched about, there's the two stories that I like the best are the ones I worked on, of course. But one of them's about food halls, because there's some really good food halls opening around the country. You have, what's the name of the one in L.A.? Is it Central Market?
Yeah, Grand Central Market.
Grand Central Market. I mean, that's been open for a little while, but the way that amalgamates so many, like, cool, you know, so many different artisans and everything. Mm-hmm. And in Atlanta, there are two major ones that are opening in Atlanta. And what's cool about that is Atlanta hasn't traditionally had, like, a real focus. It's a spread-out city where people drive to their different neighborhoods and their different homes. And so these food halls are giving Atlanta like an urban center. They're almost like a town hall, a town square, the village square from the olden days, where people can come and hang out and eat really good barbecue or drink really good coffee and just be together. So that story's cool. And then we also have one about the new indie chefs. Like there's always major trends in food, like now in New York City, French is back and Italian's always big, but mm-hmm. in Portland, Oregon, there's a Russian restaurant called Kotchka that's gotten everyone's attention. And then wow. In Oakland, California, there's a place called, Something Beach Club. I can't remember the name. Something Beach Club, where this woman's doing this really cool, like, Indian food, but it's like Oakland meets Bombay street food. And then in Boston, there's a place called Mei Mei Kitchen. So, oh my gosh, I can't believe I can't think of the name of that restaurant.
Well,
it might
you know,
be called
it's just,
Beach Club.
Well, you know, that's just a good reason for people to go and pick up the magazine and
exactly.
check it out. So just,
exactly.
Yeah, so just really quickly, I guess, so maybe take me, you know, through an article. How does it start? Do you come with a pitch, or are you brought topics, or you know, how does the writing process start for you?
You know what? That's an excellent question, and it's both. We get really good pitches from people, and or PR people will say, like, you know what, this market is interesting. You should look at it. And you know, we get a lot of PR pitches, and we can't, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of them aren't ones that we follow up on. But every once in a while, I will say, like, I think the PR game, the restaurant and food PR game has gotten so much better. Mm-hmm. And people sort of know what they're pitching you, and they say, honestly, I think you should pay attention to this. And so especially if we see it happening, because Food and Wine's a national magazine, if we see a trend across the country, that makes it really, really powerful for us. Mm-hmm. So I will, or I'll see something, I'll eat. Like, I got to go at Jonathan Gold's suggestion. I went to Taco Maria and had that awesome experience of eating the four course menu at night. And I also had fantastic tacos. And so from that grew a story I got to do, last year called like a San Diego taco trail. And I got to eat these great tacos all around Southern California or south of Los Angeles. But that was a story that just came about because I was like traveling around Costa Mesa and La Jolla and San Diego, and the continuity, the thing that kept seeing were these really cool and very different tacos that had different points of view. Mm. So,
well, your job is just horrible, isn't it?
It's so hard, Chase. What's hard is going to the gym. What's hard is waking up in the morning and eating a good meal, and then you have to wake up and you have to go to the gym. So, and you know what? Having said all that, like, oh, I had to go eat tacos around L.A., around Southern California a lot. You know, you do sit down. You have to go to a lot of meetings. You have to, like, you know, it's definitely every job. Jobs are jobs. But my job is really fun. Having said that, my job is really, really fun.
Absolutely. Well, again, I really appreciate your time sitting down with us. And as always, people can find your writing in Food and Wine magazine. And I always look forward to your articles. So thanks so much for speaking with us.
Oh, you're awesome, Chase. I'm so glad to get to talk to you.
All right, thanks. Once again, a huge thanks to Kate for coming on the show. I know that she has an incredibly busy schedule, so it was great for her to take the time out. If you haven't already, please leave us a comment in the iTunes store. We'd love to know what you think, and also subscribe to the show so that you can hear from the rest of our incredible guests. We actually have 3 episodes up already, so make sure you go back and listen to those. And, of course, please visit us at createcastpod.com. There you can find out more about our guests, the show, me, and even subscribe to our email newsletter. Remember that we're going to be doing that awesome giveaway, so it really pays to show us some love. So, one final time, those 3 magic words, rate, comment, subscribe. As always, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to CreateCast. I'm your host, Chase K. And remember, make good. And finally, here's a word from Kate Crater herself.
This is Kate Crater reminding you to make good.